Okay, today I shall continue the practice of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. When a yogi is pursuing adichitta, higher consciousness, it means concentration practice. There are three marks or three things that should be given attention to from time to time. First one is the mark of effort. Second one, the mark of concentration. And third one, the mark of equanimity. If a yogi pays exclusively attention to the mark of effort, all the time he just put forth effort, and observing the breath. Then, because of excessive effort, concentration cannot develop. The mind gets burned up. And one end up in agitation, frustration. Then he loses his heart. Therefore, Buddha said, from time to time, you have to check your effort. If you overexert your effort, you will not reach your goal. Instead, the mind become very restless because effort inclined to restlessness. So at this time, how to do? At this time, you should restrain your mind. Restrain your mind through three enlightenment factors. Number one, concentration enlightenment factor. Number two, tranquility, pasati. Sambojanga. First one is samadhi, sambojanga, concentration enlightenment factor. Try to reduce your effort little bit, reduce it little bit, so that the concentration and effort can balance. And number two is tranquilizing enlightenment factor. Pasadi. Sambojanga. This pasadi including both body and mind. So your mind must be tranquil as well as your body also must be tranquil. If your body moving here and there, it means that there's no tranquility of your mind. When your body is not tranquil, it signifies the mind is not tranquil. Tranquil body is stay there, never move. So try to cultivate this tranquility of the body first, then the mind. Of course, the concentrated mind can produce very tranquil body. The third one is equanimity. So when you exert too much effort, you should cultivate this equanimity. Look at your breath with equanimous mind. Don't do anything. Just look at it with equanimous mind. Don't put more effort. Don't put extra effort on your mind. So when the mind is overexerted, or you pay exclusive attention of effort, then at this time you have to cultivate these three enlightenment factors. Enlightenment factor of concentration, tranquility, and equanimity. Okay. Then at a time, the mind, after overexertion, you reduce the effort. And you reduce the effort too much. And you become lazy, slacking, become listless. boredom, and so on. So at this time, also, you have to cultivate another three enlightenment factors. There is first investigation of the Dharma, Vichaya Sammojjhanga. Investigation of the Dharma, at this time you have to investigate why I become so drowsy, so listless, so lacking in effort. You've got to find out your own cause. It's called investigation of the Dharma. Is it the food that caused me drowsiness? Is it overeating? Is it I take the unsuitable food that caused me this slacking mind? Or is it because my posture is not balanced? I sit too long, walk too little. So you got to investigate your failure, why it causes drowsiness to happen in your mind. This is called investigation factor. Then the second one, you have to, when your mind become lazy, you have to cultivate Viriya Sammojjhanga, enlightenment factor of effort, exertion, effort. Put more effort. How can you put more effort? You can think of how the ancient monk practice that I have shared with you and compare with your small effort and see, how can I achieve the goal by this small effort? People practice disregard their life. Put aside all the pain, disregard their life. And if I practice in this small effort, how can I achieve the goal? So you reflect how the ancient monk practice to arouse your effort and to kick out the laziness. Okay? This is called arousing the effort, enlightenment factor of effort. And the last one, enlightenment factor of rupture, pity, joy. When your mind become lazy, slacking, because there's no happiness, no joy in you. Therefore, at this time, you should arouse the joy. How can you arouse the joy? By recollecting the virtues of Buddha. Buddha sit under the Bodhi tree. Before he gain enlightenment, he sit under the Bodhi tree and he vowed, Before I become Sammasambuddha, before I realize my goal, I will never get up from this seat. So, in one sitting, he attained arhatship and become fully enlightened one. So when you think of Buddha's virtues, then there's a lot of happiness, joy in you. When you have joy and happiness, then your mind become tranquil again. And then you arouse your effort to continue to meditate. And sometimes you also can reflect the quality of the Dharma. The quality of Dharma is visible here and now. And when you get very lazy, how can you get the Dharma? So you reflect the quality of the Dharma. The quality of Dharma is visible here and now. If I put forth effort, if I stay lazy, then it's not. It's invisible here and now. So you think of quality of Dharma, and the second quality of Dharma is ihi pasiko, come and see. Come and see by yourself. And also leading onward. The Dharma is leading onward. And finally, is to be experienced by the wise. The wise is never lazy person. So you reflect in this way, then you can arouse your effort to counterattack your laziness. Therefore, from time to time, you got to check your meditation. Of course, the teacher will help you, but we don't have interview every day. So from time to time, you got to check your meditation. Am I putting too much effort that cause agitation, that cause restlessness, or I do not exert enough effort that cause laziness, drowsiness, and listless mind? And at time when the mind need to be encouraged, then you have to encourage your mind. When your mind suddenly lost all interest, then try to encourage your mind by thinking aging sickness, old age and death. How can I get rid of aging sickness, old age and death? The only thing that can help me to get rid of old age sickness and death is Dharma. It's the Dharma I am practicing now. So you need to encourage yourself. From time to time, encourage yourself. And you will reach a time when you just have to look at your breath with equanimous mind. At that time, you don't have to do anything. Just look at the breath with equanimous mind, and the breath will come and go by itself. The flow of the breath, in, out, breathing out. At that time, the effort and concentration is balanced. Then, at that point, you don't have to do anything. Look at the breath, look at your breath with equanimous mind. Just like a charioteer, look at his horse that pull the cart evenly. The charioteer doesn't have to beat the horse to let the horse run fast, because at that time the horse pull the cart evenly on the road. And at that time you don't have to do anything. That the in breath and out breath go naturally, smoothly. You just look at it with equanimous mind. So this 3 points, you have to be bear in mind. From time to time, check your effort, your concentration, and the equanimity. Only then you can progress smoothly in the path, on the path. Okay, so next one. Today I will give you a new sutta again, from Majjhima Nikaya 37, the destruction of the taints, the destruction of the craving. Okay. This sutta was expounded by the Buddha at Savatthi, and Buddha expounded this sutta to Sakka, the king of the gods in the heaven. The king of the god came down to Savatthi at night and asked a Buddha a question. And this king of the god we call Sakka, in Pali, Sakka. Sakka was a stream enterer. He's not ordinary person. He is a stream enterer. And he asked a question to the Buddha. He said, "Venerable Sir, how in brief is a bhikkhu liberated in the destruction of craving? One who has reached the ultimate goal, ultimate security from bondage, one who is foremost among gods and humans." Very brief question, but very important. Question. And Buddha answered him, "Here, ruler of gods. A bhikkhu has heard that nothing is worth adhering to. When a bhikkhu has heard that nothing is worth adhering to, he directly knows everything. Having directly known everything, he fully understands everything. So this is the first part of the answer. Can you understand what Buddha trying to say? Cannot. Because our wisdom is very limited. Our concentration, insight, wisdom is so limited. So we just cannot understand what Buddha said. So don't think sutta is easy to understand. Although the words is very easy, but without practical experience, you just understand through words, not the actual meaning. Okay. So here, Buddha said, when a bhikkhu has heard that nothing is worth adhering to, he directly knows everything. What is this everything? Everything including internal basis and external sense objects. In one of the sutta, Buddha says, what is all? What is all? Eyes and visible form, ear and sound, nose and smell, tongue and taste, body and tangible, mind and mental objects. This is all. So everything, he directly knows everything. So he directly knows eyes and form. He directly knows six sense external object and six sense internal objects. When the visible object, let's say agreeable form, beautiful form, sensually enticing form that impinges the eye sensitivity, then that owing to this contact, due to this contact, feeling arises. In this case, because the object is pleasant, agreeable, and sensually enticing, therefore the feeling is pleasant feeling. At this time, when a yogi does not understand as it actually is, what is this feeling and its nature of impermanent, then he will react to this feeling. And because pleasant feeling is so pleasant, pleasurable, so most of people, due to this pleasant feeling, craving develops. Craving, and this process happens very fast, almost spontaneously, immediately. Why? Because the mind reacts in this pattern all the times. The untrained mind react in this way all the time since long, long time ago. So when pleasant feeling develops into craving, and when there's no mindfulness and no insight to see the danger of the craving, there's no insight to see the impermanence of the craving, then craving intensified. Craving intensified become clinging. That's what Buddha said, dependent on craving, clinging arises. Once the craving become intensified, then it obsesses the mind. The mind become very agitated because of that clinging. And you want to, in order to satisfy this clinging, what you do, usually, what you do to satisfy this clinging? you act, right? You act. This act is called karma in the teaching of the Buddha. And this act can be mentally. When the craving and the clinging arises in you mentally, it's already, karma is already performed. It's called mental unwholesome karma. It's already performed. But for most people, because they cannot stand that enticement, that clinging, strong clinging, so they act verbally or they act bodily. Then this person performs bodily unwholesome karma and verbally unwholesome karma. And what is the effect of performing wholesome and unwholesome karma? As I said before, you enjoy now, you pay later. So once karma performed, either mentally, verbally, and physically, then it leaves behind karmic tendency, what we call karmic seed or karmic potency. Then you may ask, where this karmic seed or karmic potency store? Where it store? Where the karma store? Mental stream. Okay. So where the karma store? In the book of Mininda, question of by King Mininda to Arahant Nagasena. King Mininda is very intelligent, very good in debate. Number one, before he met Arahant Nagasena. So after meeting Arahant Nagasena, he posed a question to him. He said, "Venerable sir, where the karma store? You talk about karma, karma. Where is store? Please show me." Then the Arahant answered. He said that, "Do you see a mango tree? Yes. Mango tree, when it's time, mango tree bears fruit. When it's not in season, then you cannot see any fruit in the mango tree. Okay, when you cannot see the fruit, mango fruit in the tree, where the mango fruit store? Where? Please, where? Where?" So the king was puzzled, cannot answer, right? Where is store? Therefore, we cannot say where the karma store. We only can say when time comes, when all the factors are fulfilled, when it is in season, then the effect just pop up. Just like the mango tree. When it's in season, maybe April or May or June, then you see the mango fruit. When it's out of season, you cannot see the mango fruit. So karma operates in the same way. When all the factors are fulfilled, then the karma we have performed in the past, maybe 1 minute ago, in the past doesn't mean that past life. 1 minute ago, 10 days ago, 20 days ago, 20 years ago, or even up to many, many past life. So when time comes, all the factors fulfilled, then the effect just pop up. And because we do not understand the operation, the law of karma, so when this unwholesome karma ripens, we do not see this is the effect of previous karma. Then we start to blame other people. You caused me. You caused me suffering. All the suffering you have, you point at other people. You are the main cause for my suffering. Why we say like that? Because we don't have knowledge. We don't have concentration, insight, wisdom in order to trace the cause. of the effect now you experience. So many things we don't believe. Why? Because we don't have knowledge. We don't have a very limited mind. No developed, no concentration, no mindfulness, no wisdom. How far we can see? How far we can see? Therefore, in Asia, we emphasize a lot this the law of karma. Those Asian people who come to learn the Buddha's teaching, first they understand the law of karma first. Because they understand the law of karma, then they practice generosity. So that in a round cycle of rebirth, they can abide in peace. Because what you have given will come back to you. This is the law of karma. Just like a ball, you throw a ball, the ball rebounds. So what you have given to others, that is called good karma. Every karma lift the potency, lift the karmic potency in the mental stream. When time comes, the effect just pop up. Therefore, somebody reborn as rich person, somebody reborn as poor person. If you say through effort he become rich, but when he was just born in a rich family, how can through effort he become rich? Right? Maybe later on through effort he become rich, but immediately when he came out from mother's womb, it's in very rich family. But some when came out from mother's womb in poor family, how can you say he through his effort he become rich? No, it's because of past karma. This person has performed a lot of generosity. Buddha say generosity reap rich wealth and so on. Okay, therefore, when this clinging arises in the mind, if one cannot aware and cannot contemplate impermanent of that clinging, then one have to act. This act, either verbally or physically, is called karma in the teaching of the Buddha, and it leaves behind karmic energy. And when this karmic energy ripened, then there is becoming. That's why in according to dependent origination, paticca samuppada, pasa paccaya vedana, vedana paccaya tanha, tanha paccaya upadana, upadana paccaya bhavo. Dependent on clinging, becoming arises. Becoming means karmic process becoming. Because all karma we perform, in one day we perform thousands of karma. One bad thought, one karma. One good thought, one karma. So if you can concentrate on your breath for 1 hour, you know how much wholesome karma you have accumulated. Boundless wholesome karma you have accumulated. If you can just concentrate for 1 hour on your breath. Therefore, it's called higher consciousness. So, and this karma, what you have performed, what you have done in this retreat, are wholesome karma. Then this wholesome karma will pave the way to wholesome destination. And it is called becoming. So the becoming. So dependent on clinging, that's becoming. We call becoming is karmic process becoming. And when this karmic process becoming matured in due time, in season, when the time comes, bingo, bear fruit. So when the time comes, the action we have performed bear fruit. What is this fruit? It's called birth. Birth, jati, new life. New life, birth. So dependent on birth, aging comes, sickness comes, death comes. Dependent on birth, aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair. Thus arise the whole mess of suffering. Now, go back. Where does suffering come from? Where does suffering come from? Come from the very contact of sense object to sense basis. And every day, our senses are opened, right? Our eyes are open, ears are open, nose are open, tongue are open, body are open, mind are open, every day. Therefore, without concentration, mindfulness, and wisdom, whenever there's impingement or whenever there's contact of sense object to the sense basis, there is suffering, suffering, suffering. Suffering starts to revolve because depend on contact, feelings arises. Depend on feeling, craving. Depend on craving, clinging. Depend on clinging, becoming. Depend on becoming, birth. Depend on birth, aging, sickness, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, despair. Thus arise the whole mess of suffering. This is the teaching of the Buddha. So, how the karma perform? You should be able to understand now. Every moment this karma perform. So long you have no mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom, all the unwholesome karma are performed anytime, any moment. And this is the importance of why come for retreat. When you come for retreat, you guard your senses. Your mind only stay with mindfulness of breathing, and this is called higher wholesomeness. Higher dharma, higher wholesomeness. You need, everyone need higher wholesomeness or higher karma to counter balance with many unwholesome karma that we have performed. Okay. So when touched by pleasant feeling, without mindfulness, one lasts after pleasant feeling again and again. When one lasts after pleasant feeling again and again, when that pleasant feeling ceases, right? Pleasant feeling cannot last forever. Have you ever experienced any pleasant feeling last forever? No. So it will cease. It will cease very soon. So when that pleasant feeling ceases, because of your attachment to that pleasant feeling, then unpleasant feeling arises. Unpleasant feeling takes over the pleasant feeling. But before that, if you don't have attachment to the pleasant feeling, when the pleasant feeling ceases, so what? I don't attach to it. Then you are unshakable. But when this pleasant feeling arises, if you strongly attach to it, and when that pleasant feeling ceases, then unpleasant feeling will take over. Then owing to that unpleasant feeling, you feel sorrow, grief, lamentation. You beat your heart, shut your tears. So either it's pleasant feeling productive of refinements, or unpleasant feeling also productive of refinements, if one dwells without setting up mindfulness and wisdom. Okay, we should continue tomorrow. No, it's very long. Any question?